Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com. Dreaming of blissful summer days and creamy popsicles? Capture sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. Just one stick and 16 ounces of water can help hydrate you better than water alone. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
Brian Kubrick's defense is in a psychological chess match right now, not just with the prosecution, but with the jury, the judge, and even Koberger himself. Every move they make from here on out isn't about proving innocence. It's about crafting doubt, creating a narrative that disrupts the prosecution's seemingly airtight case, and making at least one juror question everything they thought they knew about forensic science and human behavior, if they know anything. That's a big question with a jury ever, all the time. But how do you do that when the world already seems to have made up its mind? With all the motions denied, the defense has no choice but to pivot here. They have to humanize Koberger. They have to dismantle the forensic evidence and manipulate the jury psychology in the decision-making process. They need to turn hard science into uncertainty and make the jurors doubt what they're seeing without ever needing to prove an alternative suspect or an alibi. So how do they do it? How do they shift the focus from did he do it to can we really be sure? Well, joining us today is psychotherapist and author Siobhan Scott, who spent years studying criminal psychology and the ways defendants, jurors, and legal teams think in high-profile cases. Siobhan, if you were advising the team on this case about psychological strategies right now as they're going in closer and closer to trial here and all the motions that we've seen that have been denied, how would you be exploring that with them? What sort of shape do you think they need to take this to give the jury the feeling that, well, maybe we don't know?
Yeah, I don't know that they have a lot of options. Can they get him to get that creepy look off his face, that stare, you know? It's just, Yes. It doesn't do him any favors.
Yeah.
I think he's got one of the creepier demeanors that we've seen. Can they bring in evidence from people about his past, the fact that he was bullied, that, you know, that he's essentially a nice guy who just likes to go stargazing a lot at night, present some kind of picture that makes him look more benign and less ominous. I think that's going to be difficult. So they may have more luck with getting the experts to argue with each other. And we know that a lot of times when you get into DNA evidence and things like that, it's confusing for people. And undoubtedly, they'll be trying to do that to get people just confused enough that they'll be, as you say, one person with doubt.
One of the big things that is expected to be argued here, it may even be being argued as people are watching this, is they're planning to file something here that is going to ask to be put into consideration when it comes to the death penalty. It's assumed here that they're going to be arguing that Koberger suffers from autism spectrum disorder, which is a big spectrum of things and has been used a bit in the past. Not a lot on murder cases. I can think of one where it actually was successfully argued, but it's not a common thing to dive into here. We're not talking about a mental illness or a personality disorder at all. That's something totally different. The defense or the prosecution, I know, already shaping up their arguments to say, we're not going to let this in or we shouldn't let this in. What's your thoughts on that, where that could possibly go and what kind of a defense that could be for Koberger, even if it is just to, not have him killed by the state?
Yeah. Yeah, it may be that there's enough evidence to tip it in the scales of let's not kill him, let's do life in prison. But is that a valid concern? Because people with autism, even fairly significant autism, and as you say, it's a spectrum, and he obviously had adequate personality resiliency and capacity to get into a PhD program. Mm-hmm. So this is a person who knows right from wrong. And when you mention the term personality disorder, it's quite possible to have autism and be psychopathic at the same time. And so I think you'd be looking at that combination of traits. And does that in any way mitigate responsibility? I don't think that it usually does in the courtroom.
It seems like this could be very much a double-edged sword for Koberger if they do introduce this as, basically part of the defense of not to execute him. Because in some ways, it's saying, look, he kind of does fit a pattern of someone who may have a version of this, be somewhere on the spectrum with the way of his thinking. So you got to give him some grace because this was might be more of an impulse than it was something he had control over or whatever the road they're going to go down. Yeah. But at the same time, you're also saying this is your guy. This is likely the guy who did it. Mm-hmm. When they're trying to also argue that it's not the guy who did this. So I mean, what the fact that this is coming to light right now, and I know they got to put these things in order. I mean, what is that saying about the strength of the case at this point, if this is what's the main point being argued?
I, as you've said, I think most of us feel like the evidence is overwhelming. I would hate to be the defense counsel. I mean, I guess if you're a defense counsel, you like challenges, but I would sure see this one as a big challenge to try to get around everything that we know.
In terms of I mean, because like autism spectrum disorders, obviously, it's huge. It's not like, okay, autism spectrum disorder, that means all of you. It's so broad. It is so broad. Would they have to really pin this down with more of a definitive, okay, here's where he is, and here's where, I mean, how do you explain something like this to a jury to try and get them to understand where he may be on this spectrum and how that has influenced his decision-making process?
It's really muddy. And, I'm not joking when I say about 9 out of 10 people I know online through social media now believe they're on the spectrum, because it's become ubiquitous in the culture that we all are neurodiverse in various mm-hmm. ways, and I'm not good with numbers. You could almost say I have dyscalculia. Well, I've heard now, well, that puts you on the spectrum. Okay, I'm not going to own that. I don't buy
sure.
it. So when we look at, is there enough of a behavioral anomaly or aberration to say that a person has some kind of impairment, that's, I think, a fairly high bar, because mm-hmm. so many people, they're certainly not morally impaired. They know right from wrong. And I don't think you can excuse, the idea that murder is wrong. You can't say, well, he was autistic, he didn't know that. No. I mean, that just doesn't fly. So it'll be interesting to see if there's testing come in or what kind of evidence they have to try to to show that there should be a different standard that applies to him from other people.
Well, and I feel like they're gonna try and take this right here of the big bad autism. Oh my gosh, it's hard. Like, it can also be a superpower. I mean, the way that they're framing it is like, well, they go to like the lowest common denominator on this and how it could be really bad if you're a very low functioning person. But honestly, I mean, it can be very much a superpower, and a lot of very, very high functioning, very successful people are on the spectrum, and that's what allows them to do what they do, because they are, in fact, on that spectrum. It allows their brain to work even harder, and in many cases have a much higher IQ than others as well. So it feels like they're really playing this up in a way that is kind of fooling, or trying to fool the jury, as to like, oh, he has some sort of a mental disorder. And that's not at all what this is.
No. Yeah. It comes with many strengths.
Yeah.
And as you said, they can become very driven in their work, in their studies. They can hyper-focus. They can, depending on the person, but many have great memories. And in no way does it impair their sense of morality or what is right or what is wrong, what's legal, what's not legal. You can't use that as an excuse.
It'd be fascinating to see how far this actually gets with him. I mean, just looking at, I mean, from the day one, I know you can't diagnose anybody like this. I certainly can't in any way, shape, or form. But just looking at him, just looking at his behavior, looking at all the social cues, looking at all the evidence that we do have about him, from witness testimony to testimony from coworkers to just his own words that we've seen out there. I mean, my God, of course he is on the spectrum. I mean, wouldn't you say, can you say?
I think you can say there's something off, and it very well could be on the spectrum. It could also be a type of personality disorder. You know, people with schizoid personality disorder are very like that. They don't connect with other people. They don't have a desire for close social relationships. They're satisfied with their own company more, and that certainly seems to fit for him too. Mm-hmm. So is it a case of we're going with autism spectrum because we think there'll be more sympathy for that right now, or more people identify with it? You know, it'll be interesting to see.
It certainly will. Do you think that if he were to go down this path of this, is this something that would be beneficial or more detrimental to his case if they in fact are able to get this through and the judge doesn't throw this one out?
That'll be really interesting. I don't know. I guess it depends on how they spin it and what kind of experts they have that can come in and talk about it.
Very fascinating. It's going to be one more thing, one more road that they attempt to go down here with Koberger. And again, good work by the attorneys, but will it stick? That's the question.
The latest true crime stories, expert breakdowns, and shocking twists, all in one place. Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. You just made it through an episode of Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Congrats on surviving the ads. Want to skip them completely next time?
What is that?
Join the True Crime Today Premium Plus channel on Apple Podcasts. Ad-free episodes, exclusive early access, and no interruptions. Just pure crime storytelling. Try it free for 3 days. Don't wait.
Bitchin' stuff. Dude.
Hit subscribe now on Apple Podcasts and get ahead of the mystery.
You know what I'm saying? Come on.